Welcome to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, courageously expanding love with me, Elizabeth Cunningham. Has the way that love has arisen in you seemed out of place or even taboo? My mission is to expand the conversation of love in the world. Is it possible to have deep, loving, healthy relationships? Have you ever been curious about having more than one relationship or partner at a time? Get ready to transform in love. Be courageous and set yourself free. In this show, we talk about relationships, sex, love, and the ways we wish we could be, but never thought were possible. I shed light on things that are not always talked about with conversations about expanding love. The Elizabeth Cunningham Show starts now.
All right, welcome to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, courageously expanding in love. My name is Elizabeth Cunningham, and I am so excited as ever to bring you this episode today. And I want you to start thinking about, have you ever thought that your desires were wrong? Have you ever had fantasies that you were afraid to tell anyone? Because you thought that they were too out there, that people wouldn't accept you if you actually shared what you fantasized about. Have you ever wanted to try kink or BDSM, but you were afraid or just didn't know where to start at all? Well, in today's show, my guest, Emily Costello, a sex coach and a polyamory kink educator based out of Long Island, New York, will be talking with me about kink and BDSM, especially for beginners. So just to introduce her a little bit before I have her pop on here, she's been working in the coach industry for about 6 years, but moved into the sexual health and wellness space. Although actually what she does is she really just talks about BDSM all day, and, you know, made that change right around the time that she started exploring, you know, being, more kinky and polyamorous and those attributes within herself as well. So that's been going on for about 2 to 3 years. And so Emily, I am so, so, so excited to have you on. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I always feel it's so weird to like hear your own intro and I'm like, oh yeah, that is me. Like I have done all this shit before, but like it's so thank you for such kind words. It's so nice to be here.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. You're so well. No, I totally get that where you're just like, oh yeah, that. That's really cool. Oh my gosh. Well, so I'm so excited that we're talking about kink and BDSM, and especially kink and BDSM for beginners, because I think that, you know, when I'm having conversations with people about sexuality, that this is the area that people get really stopped in.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Especially because like, there's no good representations of it almost anywhere. It's like one of the biggest tropes of the BDSM community is that it's like, so, and I believe it's in the polyamorous community as well, where we're just like, well, we're not seeing it exemplified anywhere in like popular media. So it's like half of my job is just myth debunking. And it's by now, it's just kind of funny because I'm just like, how, because like, I try to remember when I started and I was like, oh, right, we did believe this for a very long time. And now, so right. It's like trying to push as much information out as possible on platforms that are like not very receptive of it. And like, I don't know a good kink educator or BDSM lifestyle extraordinaire, anyone who is not shadow banned on like Instagram or Facebook or anything by this point. So it's like kind of funny, you know, once you get there, you're like, hell yeah, I made it. Like my content is like raunchy enough, quote unquote, to like make it to this point. But like,
right. It
just becomes like more exhausting to be able to have these conversations with people who are also just not only ignorant to it, but are just like closed off to it and like have decided that it's not for them because of the the improper showcasings of it. So it gets to be, which is why like beginner conversations are so important to me, because I'm just like, well, you don't know if you like it or not, because right. you don't have all of the information to make that decision.
Yeah. Well, and I think that when people think about, you know, and I mean, we could go off on, you know, shadow bans and like why people are banned on like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and, you know, all of these different places, but we'll save that conversation for a different day. But I think that when people think about kink and BDSM is that, you know, you think about hurting people, right? You think about getting hit, or you think about being dominated or manipulated or coerced or something like that. Or like sometimes you do see representation of it in some way, but it's like super advanced, right? Like you don't want to go straight into, you know, maybe you're interested in a little bit of like kink and BDSM, but you don't, you're like, oh, well, I have to know all of these things. Like I have to know how to be dominant. I have to know how to be submissive. I have to know how to like, I have to look good in the leather suit, you know? So, but it doesn't start that way, you know, kink and BDSM, like it doesn't start that way. So, you know, just to give people an idea, like how does it start? How can it start?
So I think the funnier thing is that more likely than not, the majority of people who are sexually active are participating in kink and BDSM in some way, shape, or form. And it's really funny because when we think about like the quote unquote accepted vanilla sex, like it includes aspects of BDSM like choking or spanking or, you know, any of these. And what's funny is because a lot of the like accepted, like the quote unquote accepted measures that partake in vanilla sex are actually more advanced aspects of kink and BDSM, like choking or breath play, name calling, taking on roles. And so what's really funny, like I always find it to be very, very funny, where I'm just like, okay, these are the ones that we have accepted, but these are also the ones that cause most harm. But like the easiest way that we can get started in kink and BDSM is even just like understanding and starting to look at our own fantasies and starting to be like, okay, like what am I interested in? Like, what do I actually want to partake in? Because a lot of times, even just the acceptance of this fantasy, or even just talking about it out loud, because talking about it even begins to start to eradicate a lot of the shame that we'll feel for these things. And just getting ourselves comfortable with the language and with the visuals and even the desire of it overall is like a very underrated first step, because a lot of times, like if we have a fantasy about being spanked or being, or calling someone daddy, or maybe it is like the super expensive leather suit and being bound onto a bed, like because New Age media has created such this drastic idea surrounding it, we feel bad for that fantasy. And then we like push it to the side and we're like, oh, but I can't desire that because that's weird or that's wrong or it's bad, or, you know, insert negative adjective here. And so one of the easiest things that we can do in the beginning is just say like, I do have this desire and there are ways that I can go about this safely and consensually, which are like the biggest points, which I'm sure we'll get to later about safety and consent.
Oh yeah. That's like question number three here. I love that, because, you know, I actually had a gentleman call me at one point and he was like, I have to talk to you because there's something wrong with me. And I was like, okay, what's wrong with you? And he was like, well, I fantasize about seeing my partner being, you know, having sex with other people, and there's something wrong with me. And so I think that having that acceptance, that exactly what you just said, like just accepting, like that's a fantasy that I have, and there is nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. If all parties are consenting, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And so I love that that's like the place to start, acceptance. It seems so simple. Yeah. Like when you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, acceptance is a place to start, right? But when we have these thoughts like, oh, well, it's bad, or I can't do that, or like no one would ever accept me, or like you said, you know, insert negative adjective here, then we can't even get to the acceptance part. So yeah, beautiful. So what is kind of, before we get to like the, you know, consent and safety piece, let's back it up to, what do you mean by kink and BDSM? And they're different, so, right? Because there's kink and then there's BDSM. So like, let's kind of separate these two out a little bit.
Yeah. So I completely always butcher like the word for word definition. So like, spare me for a moment. But
no worries.
Kink is known to be anything, like any sexual act that is like, quote unquote, abnormal. So when we think about like kinky acts, they're anything that are not considered to be like, I hate the word normal so much, but like that's the way that it is phrased all the time. But like, so we can think of like kink as anything outside of the like the widely accepted scope that takes up sexual, like sexual desire or sexual expression or anything like that, which is why a lot of times, like, it has such a broad definition, which is why a lot of times people will partake in kink and not even realize that they're partaking in kink, right? So like, you know, having animalistic urges like growling or, you know, biting partners or spanking partners, like those can be considered minor acts of kink. Whereas then we can get into more drastic acts of kink, which is like, you know, we can have like torture of the genitalia, or we can have like, you know, needle play or anything like very outlet. Like, so the scope is like so wide, which is why I hate this definition, is because it doesn't encompass everything. But kink is essentially just like a sexual act that is seen to be outside of the normal scope. Whereas BDSM is much more nuanced. And so BDSM stands for bondage, discipline and dominance, I believe, submission and sadism and masochism. And so BDSM a lot of times is more associated with that dominance and submissive. So the role aspects of having someone dominating someone else, or a form of sadomasochism, which is the giving and receiving of pain for pleasure. Now, again, like there within either of these definitions, there's so many different nuances. So like, I will always invite people to like come and correct me on these things, because they can also be interpreted differently. But the biggest change that I found between the two of them is that BDSM is more so encompassing the roles of what we believe to be power dynamics. So a singular human or more than one human dominating over another human. Whereas in kink, it's somewhat like there is still going to be aspects of that dominant and that submission, but it's more so referred to as a top and a bottom, where someone is taking control and topping someone else who is bottoming to them. So if we're just partaking in kink, we won't necessarily have the roles that are present within BDSM culture, which is why we try to make that distinction, because you can be a dominant human with or, you know, a dominant role without partaking in kink, or you can partake in kink without having the role of a submissive. So kink is a lot centered around desires and sexual advancements, whereas BDSM does not have to have any sort of sexual undertone whatsoever. But there is like that psychological and that emotional play of, you know, pain for pleasure, but it doesn't necessarily have to be physical pain. It could be like emotional or psychological pain, as well as a dominant overtaking a submissive, or a submissive submitting to a dominant.
Right. Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you for expanding on all of that. And yeah, and it really does. It's this whole world, right? And one of the things that I love about kink is that it really is like endless. You could do something different every single day for the rest of your life if you wanted to. There's like this endless creativity inside of kink. That's one of the things that I really love about it as well. Okay, so we're going to go on a break. And when we come back, I want to get into, you know, if you're a beginner in this, how do you start in a way that's safe, in a way that's consensual? How do you even have these? Okay, great, you've accepted this about yourself, but like, how do you even talk about it to your partners and like create something that you actually want? So on our next segment, we are going to talk about that. So stick around.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day.
All right, welcome back to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding in Love. And this episode, we've been talking to Emily Costello about how to begin kink and BDSM and how to explore as a beginner in this realm. And so last segment, we set up, you know, what are some of the blocks that beginners might have? And what is kink and BDSM anyway? And now we're going to talk about how do you have these conversations? How do you set up, you know, kink and BDSM safely and consensually? And, you know, if you already know, if you've already accepted your fantasies, how do you actually say those things out loud and say them out loud in a way that is going to have them actually come to life? All right. So Emily, how do you do that?
Oh man. I wish that there was like a simple way that I could be like, so this is step one and this is step two, but it's not. And, but there are some like universal underlies to it. So one of the first things that you always want to do before engaging with anyone else is to have those safety measures in place. And they're encompassing of our own personal boundaries, rules within the partnership. And that could be, you know, sexual rules or like rules like romantic rules within partnership itself. It rules become more prominent as we step more into polyamorous relationships versus monogamous ones. So we won't get super into that because I don't want to like start confusing everything. But so it's boundaries, rules, and safe words are like some of the biggest tropes. And safe words and boundaries both are on this underlie of consent. So consent is essentially, for people who don't know, which shocking, please know what it is. But consent is essentially just like asking permission before doing something. It is something that we don't talk about nearly as often as we should. And it's not seen as we've been talking about, it's not as seen in mainstream media, which is just upsetting, right? A lot of times we'll be using nonverbal consent in a lot of popular tropes, you know, the staring into someone's eyes, the moving closer, the like the slight nod of the head. Instead of going to someone and being like, hey, can I do X, Y, and Z? Or like, would you be comfortable if I were to say X, Y, and Z? So asking for consent is always like top notch, and we should be doing it before every interaction, even with an experienced partner. You know, over time, we can step into what's called nonverbal consent, which then is, you know, the making eye contact or the slight nods, or you know, sometimes in BDSM, we'll like, if there's like this age old trope of like getting down on your knees in front of your dominant, or, you know, sometimes consent will be like putting on of a play collar or something like that, sort of something to sort of signal the beginning of a scene or like a sexual session or what have you. And so consent is always number one. And then from there, we go into boundaries. And boundaries are encompassing, I'm going to try to make this like as succinct as possible, because we can go on, can have a whole podcast on just boundaries. But
so we have this podcast.
My God, I mean, imagine. But so within boundaries, we have what's called hard and soft boundaries. And then we do have like medium boundaries, but those are a little more gray area depending on whom you speak to. So hard boundaries are the things that we will not partake in whatsoever at all. And they're things that we ourselves need to have in place in order to feel safe during an interaction. So some examples of hard boundaries could be like, you know, the declination of some form of play. So a very common one is like no knife play, no needle play, you know, nothing with sharp or nothing that's going to cause permanent damage. Because that level of body modification is sometimes like very much not okay for a lot of people. It could be something as small as the like phrasing that you don't like to be called. Like I know I have certain nicknames that are on my hard boundaries list because they have negative associations. And it's something I'll tell partners right from the offset. And I'm like, you can't call me X, Y, and Z because I will shut down and I will not want to partake again. Or, it could be like wearing a condom during scene or like having any sort of barrier in place, you know, whether that's an oral barrier or a penetrative barrier. And it's just like boundaries are the things that like personal boundaries. I know that we talk a lot about personal boundaries in like the mental health space now, and sexual boundaries are very similar because they're things that make us feel safe within an interaction with another human being. They protect our physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being so that we can actually show up in a scene. Because when we think about it, we are either having total power over another human being during a kink or a BDSM scene, or we are submitting to another human being. In both of these instances, trust is so paramount. And if our bodies don't feel safe, like if we feel as if a boundary is being crossed, we're not going to be able to trust that human. And the scene is just not going to go the way we want it to. It can actually become very traumatizing, which a lot of times, and I think we'll probably get into later segments, but is like one of the major issues that we see when we think about BDSM is we think of this like totalitarian, like, I'm crossing your boundaries, like I'm taking what I want, I don't care. And we don't actually talk about those measures of safety, right? And so on the flip side, so we have our hard boundaries, which are like things I will not do whatsoever. Like I will not partake in these at all versus the, okay, my dog is like growling like all hell. Okay. I didn't know if you could hear it.
But I was like, I can't.
That's like
a no, not really. Okay. I did think it was a car actually. That's so okay. funny.
So we have our hard boundaries, and on the other side are our soft boundaries, which are essentially, I always like to think of them as things that we are curious about but we've never done before. Right. Mm-hmm. A soft boundary for a lot of people, as a good example, is butt stuff or anal sex, where it's like you're curious about it and you've never done it before, but you have to say like, this is a soft boundary of mine because of the fact that like, if you've never done it before, there is going to be some level of trepidation. And we want to make sure that the other person is aware that we are new to this sensation and that we're stepping into it for the first time. So our soft boundaries, like both of them have to be communicated. But the soft boundary is like, when you think of the phrase, like pushing boundaries, we're pushing soft boundaries of like, I've never tried this thing before, or I've done it once and I had mixed reviews and I want to do it again. Mm-hmm. And then we have our medium boundaries, which can err on the, it's like, it's so nuanced for so many people, but medium boundaries essentially are just like those things where I always like to think of them as the boundaries that require a check-in before play of like, are you up for pushing towards this boundary or are we treating it like a hard boundary today, essentially?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah. That, yeah. And cause it does, it changes from, you know, what you want, right? Changes from, day to day, and can also change from moment to moment, which is, you know, again, where you come in with, like, you're not just setting up the, actually, I want to back all the way up, like, in setting up these conversations, that what you said at the beginning was, you know, we don't have these, like, explicit conversations. And I think for some people, it's because it's really weird. It's really awkward. You know, like you don't want to ruin the moment and quote unquote, ruin the moment when actually what you're doing is setting yourself up to be traumatized possibly. But really having the capacity and the almost courage to have those conversations, and it does get easier over time. And it does become like really fun. Like for me, having consent conversations with my partner and being like, what do we want to do? How do we want to set it up? Like, what are we up for today? Is like super fun, really empowering. And especially in doing like kink and BDSM, where it's like, ooh, I want to try this, I want to do that, like actually verbalizing it. But I think in talking about those beginning conversations, it is going to start off a little awkward, like, hey, I want to talk to you about this thing, you know? But, you know, just to really talk about and have in place that it gets easier over time. And it also gets really fun and exciting over time, not just easier, but in my experience, it's gotten a lot more fun to have those conversations about what I want to play with, and, you know, hearing what my partner wants and what they want to play with as well.
Cause like, especially because a lot of times when we think of that conversation, we think of this very transactional, like, is this okay? Is this what you want? Is this what I want? Whereas like, and like in the beginning, especially with a new partner, like they might turn out that way because you're trying to find people's turn-ons and you're trying to find out, you know, what they enjoy and where your desires overlap. But over time with partners, like with my Dom, we used to have these, they're called pre-scene consults of like, which I think also and lends an ear to like the consultation aspect of it. But like, you know, it's also just like a pre-scene negotiation where like my Dom and I used to literally just like lay all of our toys out on the bed. And he's like, okay, what order do you want me to use them on you today? And I got to pick which toys I was like, cause I'm like huge into impact play. So that was like a main, main foundation for most of our scenes. So to be able to just be like, I want that one and that one and that one. And, but like be able to also say like, I really don't want to try that one. And maybe we can use that one, but keep it on the back burner. So like essentially setting up the levels, what I wanted, like the level of what we wanted that play to be. Right. But as you were talking, I was also thinking how it ties into a lot of what we talked about in the first segment, where having these consenting conversations ties in almost completely with the actualization and realization of our fantasies being okay. Like a lot of times we will be afraid to ask for what we want because we're afraid that whomever we're speaking to is going to shame us for that desire. Mm-hmm. And so being able to get so comfortable with the thing that we want as to like actually go to someone and be like, I want you to spank me with this wooden paddle. And if they say like, wow, that's really fucking weird. And you can be like, no, it's not. You're just not into that. And like, that takes so much courage and we don't actually like recognize it until we've had that conversation so many times where we're like, oh, this is a normal desire for me to have. And like their denouncement of it is a reflection on them, not necessarily a reflection on me. So a consent conversation comes so hand in hand with like the accepting of our fantasies. And I just wanted to like shine light on that as well, because the more accepting we become of one, the more accepting we become of the other one.
Oh, beautiful. No, I think that is intrinsically linked, because I know for myself that when I have that deep assuredness, confidence, self-acceptance of what I want and what I desire, if someone does, you know, reject it or have something negative to say about it, it doesn't really bother me that much. It's like, oh, okay, well, you're just not into that. I got it. Like, you said it in a really mean way, but I got it. Like, you're not into it.
Yeah, like we can see it as, instead of a flaw of the self, we can see it as an incompatibility. Where you're just like, okay, we're not going to be able to get along because you think that my desires are weird. And I wish you the best of luck. Go off and enjoy your missionary in the dark. I will sit over here and enjoy my things and we will be okay. Like, but it takes so much courage to get to that point. So like, it's also just like emphasizing that over and over, being like, wherever you are on the spectrum of like absolute fucking shame for the things that you are feeling versus like total body confidence for the things that you are feeling, like it's all valid and it's all normal, and like moving down the line is like what we hope to do, but it doesn't always get to that point like right from the onset, because there are so many people who just don't understand, and then who push that ignorance into that, and that like they project that ignorance onto other people and being like, well, how can you even? And I'm like, I don't have the energy to have this conversation with you anymore. Like, no.
It's like and I think that's really important. And we're going to pause for a break. And then I want to get back to, I want to talk about safe words. Like that is one thing that I want to, and like different types of safe words, because I think that, oh, I love that conversation. Okay. So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk about safe words and get even deeper into this conversation, which has just been so juicy. But yeah, just to reiterate, yeah, wherever you are, it is a spectrum. And wherever you are on the spectrum, whether you're, you know, in shame or whether you're in full acceptance or somewhere in between, that you are not stuck. You're not permanently where you're at, that you can move down the line, so to speak. All right, so we're going to go on a break and we will be right back and have even more of this beautiful conversation.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
All right, welcome back to the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding in Love. And that is exactly what we've been doing with Emily Costello and talking about kink and BDSM. And we've been getting deeper and deeper and deeper into having consent and safety conversations and really just normalizing how you feel and what you want and being able to verbalize that and talk about that with your partners. And so on this segment, I want to get a little bit deeper into the safety aspect and specifically safe words. So what are safe words and how do you use them? And why do I want to talk about it for a whole segment?
So I don't know exactly why for the whole segment. Those are your thoughts. I feel the same way. So I'm like, yes, but I feel it's because safe words are also some of those things that we do not talk about, like, ever, or like a lot of times we don't recognize that they actually exist until we are like in the community itself. And we're like, oh, this isn't an abusive situation, because what safe words do is give power to both people within a scene, or all people within a scene, depending on how many there are, of being able to say, no, this doesn't feel good anymore, and I want to stop. Or sometimes we'll have a safe word to slow down and be like, I've reached my limit, like, I've reached my capacity, we cannot push anymore, right? So like the conversation we had last segment about pushing those soft boundaries, like when you call some forms of safe words, it's just like, we can't push any more boundaries, we are at a good place, I want to stay here. And so there are so many different nuances of safe words. I'll talk about like the basic ones that I've been using and that I've seen other people use. But what's brilliant about a safe word is that it gets everyone onto the same page. And it gives, especially for submissives, I find is that it gives power back to the submissives during the scene. Because what I've heard before is that the dominant has the authority during the scene, or the top will have an authority during the scene, but the submissive or the bottom has the power during the scene. And it's because they have the power to stop the scene or to control the flow of the scene. Right. So like the more dominating persona, and we'll say that as both dominant and top, so we don't have to keep jumping back and forth, but the more dominating persona has, like, they tend to play in the scene. And the scene is, I realize I've said this so many times, the scene is the interaction between top and bottom, or dom and sub. We call it a scene because we drop into like quote unquote roles. So it kind of plays out almost like a theatrical scene. And so, which is so cool when we think about it, but like, I won't get into like the dorky aspects of it. It's fine. But
again, like we said, we could create like a whole pod. I mean, and there are whole podcasts about like kink. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. Safe words.
So in safe words, they give the power back to either individual during the scene to stop said scene. And so the most common safe words that I've seen are what's called the color system, where sometimes safe words are just used as like a check-in method to make sure that either party are still feeling fine. And so in that case, like a green would be, I'm good to go. Like, you can keep going. We can keep going at the same pace, or we can increase pace because I feel good. A yellow is that slowdown that we talked about just a few minutes ago, where it's like, I've reached my limit, I've reached my capacity. Like, we can hang out here, but we can't go any harder. Right. A lot of times we'll think about it in like an impact scene. If a dominant is, you know, hitting a submissive at like a 7 out of 10 force, and they check safe word and the sub says yellow, and then they're like, okay, I'm not going to hit you any harder than at this moment, or like at this point. Or we can think of like binding getting too tight. We can think of, you know, the type of verbiage, especially if it's a humiliation or degradation. So there's a lot of different ways that we can just be like staying at the same level. And a red in the color system is a stopping of the scene completely. When we stop the scene in a mid-scene situation, because normally what happens is like when we think about the crux of a movie, where like it has that climactic element, and then it has that like fall down, or like that come down, I guess. And then it kind of peters out and plateaus as like the movie ends. So in a scene, we'll have the climactic moments of the scene. We'll have a slower come down for the scene to make sure that we prevent what's called drop, where it's like we crash too hard out of our roles and we start to feel very melancholic and even sort of.
Sorry, I couldn't hear what.
Siri. So we start to feel like a little. Oh my God. I'm so sorry for the interruption of my watch, but.
So, Siri really wants to know what you're talking about.
She's like, tell me about aftercare. In the aspects of scene, when we have a gradual come down, we'll gradually drop out of roles and then transition into what's called aftercare, which are like showers and cuddles and weighted blankets, you know, things that make us feel really good so that we feel protected and secured. When we call red in a scene or stop the scene preemptively, the words can be anything, right? But we tend to use the color system because it's more of like a universal like stoplight system, which everyone knows. So we don't have to like really think about it as much. When we call red, we go immediately from wherever we were in that scene to an immediate transition into aftercare. Because normally when we're calling red, it's because we're becoming overwhelmed, we're losing ourselves to the scene. So like our role is becoming predominating force instead of our humanness, which is a very, very important distinction. Like we always have to remember that our partner is a human first, not like some sort of submissive or dominant doll or toy that we can mold into our own desire and being. Or sometimes red is just like we were hit way too hard and we like moved over our limit without realizing it. And suddenly we're like, oh God, this is like too much sensation. Or like if it's a psychological aspect, you know, maybe we're slipping into past triggers or what have you. So there's a lot of reasons why we'll call red. And what's always important to understand is that when we call a safe word, there's in the BDSM community, there's especially for newbies, there's so much shame around calling safe word because we feel as if we failed our partner or the scene overall to be like, no, I couldn't make it, right? Like I couldn't finish out the scene because like most scenes like on average are probably between like an hour or two. So a lot of times we'll try to push through it to be like, no, I can do it. Like it's not that bad. It's not like, I know I've done it before. Where like, you know, we're because of the fact that like a lot of times our mind just can't handle as much as our body or our body can't handle as much as our mind. So we're like trying to push through it. So a lot of times we feel if we can't do it, quote unquote, then we've failed the scene or we failed our partner. So understanding that safe wording is about your safety and about being able to, because if we think about it, like if we go through a scene that is becoming psychologically triggering for us and we don't call safe word, we're instead falling prey to the possibility of becoming triggered, of becoming traumatized, or like reigniting old traumas, of blaming it on our partner, even unconsciously, and then not feeling safe enough to continue the scene at another time or to partake in a new scene, right? Whereas if we call safe word, we'll have that momentary, and like, I feel like it's normal for us to be disappointed, especially if we had been like planning a scene for a while, like this is something you wanted, right? And then it ended up not working out. And so in any of those moments, like we're allowed to be disappointed and we can be frustrated with ourselves or with our partner if they had called safe word, but it's not a time to feel ashamed of ourselves because like anything else, our mental health always takes priority. And even in some cases, this instance, you know, maybe it's our physical health. We're like, we were doing an impact scene or we were doing something with like sharp points, like needles or knives or something like that, that our body just couldn't handle anymore. Right. Like there are some very, very drastic styles of play. Like some very drastic toys that, you know, if, unless you're like a super, super trained individual. And even then sometimes like it gets to be too much for the body. And knowing our limits is something that's very, very important, like our psychological, emotional, and physical limits. But the thing is too, is that a lot of times we don't know what our limits are until we found them. And so a lot of times we find our limits by accident and we'll call safe word to be like, okay, I found, it's like when you get drunk for the first time or and like it's terrible. Like I hate using this, this analogy, but it's very true. We're like, you get drunk for the first time and you're just like you wake up the next day and you're hungover as hell. And you're like, well, fuck. Okay. I found it. Like I found out where my limit is, or you're like at the bar and you're like, that last shot wasn't a good idea. And you're like trying to come back down. Like that's like, we find our limits sometimes by tripping over them. We find boundaries sometimes by tripping over them. So it's because it's a normal process to like sit into this place. But if you get accidentally too drunk, you're not sitting there in like a shame spiral the next day. You're just like, well, I fucked up and that's awful. And so if we find our limit, like we call safe word, we get out of the scene and then it's the same trope, right? Like we sit with it and we're like, okay, I found my limit. Or I found like, maybe today I wasn't in it. Like maybe I wasn't, you know, I've used scenes as like means of anxiety, like moving through anxiety before. And there are some days where it's just like our bodies or our minds can't handle it as much as others. And so like being able to step into the scene and having these safe words instead of like shaming ourselves for using them is very important. But I also want to just reiterate that like the color system is the thing that most people will use, like most people will use, quote unquote, because it's universal. And especially with new partners, like we don't have to explain what red means. They'll just be like, oh, you use the color system. So red means stop. Okay, great. And like that can be like a very quick safe word conversation. Whereas if we're using like pineapple or a banana or like some random word, we have to make sure that everyone's on the same page as to what they mean. But we can also have safe words that switch toys during scene. I've used safe words before that like are a mental check-in. So like my old Dom used to call blue. And as soon as he called blue, I had to be like, oh, I'm feeling XYZ. So it was like a trigger response of being like, how are you feeling right now? Instead of like trying to find my color, he would prefer verbiage. So we'll use that sometimes. So if we have any deviation off of like a known system, we have to have that known. And safe words are part of our pre-scene consult of saying like, what are your safe words? Are they the same as mine? What happens if you call safe word? Because like, if we're transitioning into a certain type of aftercare, if we call safe word, that's also important to know. Because if I call red in the scene, the Dom has to know, okay, she needs water and a weighted blanket because right. something is wrong. Whereas like, you know, if he calls safe word, maybe he needs to take a moment by himself, go outside for a breath, and then come back in and have a conversation. So it's always important to like know what the safe words are and what happens when we call them.
Yeah. And I think that that's really important as well, is to have, what does that trigger mean? Like a safe word is not just, it's not just go or stop, but it's like a safe word is like a trigger for something that you need, or it's something that you need to communicate. And, and I really love the color system, and I've heard of the color system before as well. And that's something that I use too. And it's really like universally acceptable. And one of the things that, accepted rather, that's the word I wanted to use. but I think one of the things that you pointed out was, you know, this shame that we get in, oh, like we have to like stick it out. We have to tough it out. Like, I don't want to disappoint people. I don't want to like, oh, if I need to end it early, quote unquote, then that's like a bad thing or something like that. But I think one of the things that I think of that really helps me out a lot in mitigating that is that if you can have a solid no, then people can trust your yes. Right. Mm-hmm. Because in honoring yourself and honoring where you're at, you're actually building trust with you and your Dom, or you and your sub, or you and whoever you're playing the scene with, is that if you can have that high level of a communication, then people can trust that you will give those check-ins, that you will be honest, you know. So it's also, you know, in reframing it, and this is because I've been someone who's struggled with that as well. Like I tough things out, you know, like I'm like, I can do it. I can tough it out. But then you're losing trust with the people that you're playing with, because then they can't trust that you'll actually say if you're okay or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times it becomes traumatizing to the other partner, because they're like, I was hurting you and you didn't tell me. And now they feel bad, right? So that it becomes a guilt response. And now they're less likely to want to play with you again or to engage in any sort of scene with you again, because they're like, well, I don't know if I can trust that you're actually going to call safe word when you need it.
Right. Yeah. Brilliant. And I think that, you know, that's one of the reasons why, for me, kink and BDSM is really healing, because you do have to have that trust in yourself and have the communication to say what you need and to say how you're feeling and to be honest with your partners. Like for me, kink and BDSM has been such a place of healing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Same for sure.
Yeah. And I think that that's counterintuitive to what people, you know, the myths and misconceptions.
Yeah, of course.
What weird how misconceptions are totally wrong. okay, well, we're going to go on another break. And when we come back, we're going to wrap up this beautiful conversation with this beautiful human about kink and BDSM. So stick around and we will see you in a moment.
We'd love to hear from you on Transformation Talk Radio and live on Facebook. Call into the show, 1-800-930-2819.
All right, welcome back to our last segment of our show today. We are here on the Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding Love, and we've been talking to Emily Costello about kink, BDSM, consent, myths, misconceptions, safety, creating beautiful consent containers and scenes. And it's been brilliant. So if you have missed any of this episode, please rewatch, replay, come back when it's aired fully and listen to this entire, watch this entire episode. So Emily, the last couple of questions that I have for you are just, do you have anything that we didn't cover today that you feel is like tantamount? It's just like, if you get, you know, like you need to know this, you need to start here, whatever that is.
I think the most common thing, we've kind of danced around it a little bit, but I think just like being able to reiterate that kink and BDSM is not abuse if consent is present. And like it gets to be, and I feel like this is where a lot of the discrepancy comes up, is because a lot of the antics that happen through a BDSM or a kink scene can be misconstrued or even interpreted as abuse. But the difference is that consent is present, is that it is an act between two or more consenting adults, which is also very important, right? That no minors, please and thank you. And that everyone has consented to this method of play. They have safety practices in place. They have boundaries that have been discussed. Like all of the measures that we have talked about are there. But if these measures are not there and people, and this happens, there's so many, we call them faux doms or like fake subs in the community. Whereas these people who will use this role as a means to have power over instead of power with. So power over is when we think of like a dictator sort of, where they're just like putting other people down in order to bring themselves up. And a lot of times when consent is not present, when boundaries are not discussed, when safe words are not present, it is a means of power over from a dom to a sub, or a very bad sub to an unsuspecting dominant, or top and bottom in this case as well. And in these moments, though, that is not BDSM. That is not kink. That is abuse. Because if consent is not present and we are having this sort of like physical or emotional or psychological pain, then that is not okay. And so that is something that I want to stress very heavily, is that when it is proper BDSM or kink, there is consent present. There are safety measures in place. If there is no consent present, and if there are no safety measures in place, like there can be consent present with no, like that becomes sort of a gray area of what becomes abusive or not. And that's dependent upon the person's boundaries, but having neither one of them present is not okay and can be charged for sexual assault or worse.
I think so. That is, yeah, yes.
And it's very important.
Very, very important. Absolutely. And I think, thank you. And thank you for just making that as explicit as possible. It's just, if there is no consent, if there is no safety, if there's been no discussion, that is abuse. Mm-hmm. And that's not okay.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. It can go even as far as like, it can be, you know, a physical interaction between two humans. It can be verbal abuse as well. Like a lot of times, you know, I've got it so many times, like so many people in my DMs are telling me as like, tried and true subs, where they'll get like faux doms into their DMs or like on their dating apps, that are trying to command them right from the onset without these safety measures in place. And we're like, that's verbal abuse. So like there are different, so like it has so many different scopes to it. And like obviously a dating app or, you know, an Instagram DM is going to be different, because you can just block that human and you don't have to interact with them again, versus something physical, which is like much more dangerous. But they're all have like different scopes and different measures of danger. And they're all things that we should be taking into account when we enter into this lifestyle for the first time. Like always asking permission before we do anything, even if you think you don't have to ask or you shouldn't have to ask, like something as simple as nicknames or something as simple as sharing photos or, you know, sharing experiences should always have are you comfortable hearing about this? Like, are you comfortable seeing this? Like, whatever it is, because you don't know what the other person has been through before. Yeah. And that sets the precedent between a good BDSM or kink interaction and a bad BDSM or kink interaction.
Yeah. And I think for me, one of my filter questions for just any interaction in general, but like especially for like kink and BDSM is like, what could be the impact of this? If I did this, if I said this, if this happened, what could be the impact of that happening? Who would that impact? How would that impact them? And I think that like filtering your words and your actions and then asking questions on top of that, it's like, oh, well, it might impact this person. Well, you probably, if it might impact that person, it probably means that you need to have a consent or safety conversation with that person. Right. And especially when we get into things like polyamory, which we didn't touch on at all today, when like multiple people are involved in multiple different capacities, then those filter questions are really good. Who might this impact? How might it impact them? And then making sure that you're having those conversations. Yeah. Really beautiful.
You finally
got something to say about it. Yep.
He's just like, ask questions, damn it.
He's like, yeah, you're right. Ask questions. All right. Beautiful. Okay. So in closing, I want to ask some of my closing questions for the Elizabeth Cunningham Show. What is love to you?
Love to me is, first and foremost, it's always an energy. Anytime I think of being in love or experiencing love, it's always like this lightness and like this brilliant energy. And so I always think of it like that, but I also think of love being on a much more fundamental level of following through on commitments to another human being, whatever that commitment might be, right? So if we have the expectation of our relationship or a dynamic, if we have the expectation of, you know, keeping up as friends or even family members, like there's an expectation of how we should be treated and how we are going to be received by another human being. And following through on that commitment and expectation is like the absolute foundation of love for me.
Beautiful. Thank you. If you could make sure that someone got one takeaway from this show today, what would it be?
I think it's the most basic that your desires are valid, right? Like everyone's got some weird shit that they're into, and through an absolute society that just like disbands it and will talk shit about it any chance that they get, we are made to believe that a lot of our desires and our fantasies and our wants are wrong or bad, and that that in turn makes us wrong or bad, but it doesn't. Like you can be a tried and true professional and, you know, have a cross-dressing kink. You can be like a superpowered entrepreneur and like being hit by someone who's like 2 feet taller than you. Not that that's my experience or anything, you know, like that's just weird. But like, there's so many different things that you can be into. And the first step towards accepting it or having other people accept it is accepting it yourself and recognizing that we're not meant to be in this boxy container of what is okay versus not in any sort of sexual interaction. Is this okay for me? Will I be safe if I partake in this? And that's it.
Beautiful. Thank you. If there's one action that you think that people could take out of listening today or watching, what would that be?
Ask someone before you kiss them. Just straight up. Just do it. Like, or ask someone before you do anything. Like it's astounding how awkward and clumsy we feel the first time we do it, because you're thinking, I shouldn't have to do this. This is weird. But the amount of people that I have spoken to who value someone so much more highly after a first date, they're like, yeah, they asked before they can kiss me on the first date. And everyone's like, yo girl, what? No way. So like, ask before you do anything. Like even something as simple as like, I really like using this pet name with people that I'm interested in. Can I use this for you? Like it makes people feel so seen and so heard and so valued. So just ask permission before you do anything. And like the good thing that can always happen is that someone's going to be like, oh, of course you can, but you don't have to ask me next time, because now you have rolling consent and that's awesome.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right. For those humans who are like, oh my gosh, I love you, Emily. I need to learn more from you. How can I find you? How can I follow you? How can I participate in whatever it is that you're doing? What would you say to those humans?
Well, I would say that I basically live on my Instagram page, which is a problem. And my dom's actually helping me to be less addicted to my Instagram. It's not working very well, but bless his soul. But so you can find me on Instagram at coach_Emily with 2 Y's. I have links there to all of my programs, my Patreon page, which has like personal essays and actually notes from my dominant too. So it like gives multiple perspectives. So I think it's really fun.
Yeah,
and just different ways to interact with, different ways to work with me. It's that or my email list, which has an email, at least one email out every week, like every Monday I try to do, which is mostly I just like word vomit into an email, but so.
But you have a lot of great word vomit.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. The writer in me is getting very excited about that. So.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, and in our show notes, we have links to all of that. So click on the show notes below. So whatever platform that you are listening or watching on, there are show notes below. So just click on Emily's Instagram page or the email list and sign up, subscribe, hang out, check out, participate in, do it. Go do the thing. All right. Emily, thank you so much for being on my show today. It has been an absolute pleasure having you. Mm-hmm. And I have absolutely loved and learned from this conversation. So thank you.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I love being here.
All right, everyone. Keep loving out there.
You have been listening to The Elizabeth Cunningham Show, Courageously Expanding Love with me, Elizabeth Cunningham. Tune in live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on transformationtalkradio.com, where we shed light on relationships, sex, love, and the ways we wish we could be, but never thought were possible. Learn to love yourself and create the relationships you want. Connect with me at ElizabethAnnCunningham.com. That's ElizabethAnnCunningham.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.